Well, greetings once again to everybody in the TFMR universe. This is your pal, Turd. And it is Thursday, right here before the release of the latest FOMC Fed lines, just a couple of hours away. But that doesn't change the fact that it's Thursday, which means it's time for A2A. And this week's guest is someone that a lot of folks have been clamoring for me to have back on. With everything going on in the world of currencies, currency wars, the IMF and their SDR, everything else that that is bubbling below the surface out there, it's definitely time to bring back in Willem Middelkoop. Willem, if you recall, came on first time about a year or so ago, maybe. Willem, I guess it was last summer.
Yeah, last summer. It was in July 2014.
That sounds about right. His book, The Big Reset, which you see, there's a link to it here on this podcast page, has now sold over 100,000 copies worldwide. It's been translated into 7 languages, most recently translated into German, where right now at present it is the number one best-selling book for business and finance in Germany. He's got his own site, the Big Reset blog, which you also see linked on this site, where he just collects information and posts it there. And it's something you should probably have on your favorites list, because he'll probably see a few things that others miss, and you don't want to miss out on anything these days. So the Big Reset's coming out in a new revised edition in October with 30,000 new words added to it, which just tells you how things change so rapidly these days. I encourage everybody, if you don't already have it, to pick up a copy. And Will, thank you very much for joining us here at TFMR.
Yeah, so wonderful. Thank you for the invitation. Great to be back. And, you know, in the revised edition for the Big Reset, I added some 30,000 new words. That's 100 pages, but it's all added. So I didn't take anything out. So that means that my scenario is unfolding pretty well like I envisioned. But, of course, during the last 18 months, I collected more and more evidence about well, the planned next stage for the international financial system. So that's what was added. And also because in the last 12 to 18 months we have seen huge developments around Ukraine, Russia, China backing Russia, developments around the start of the BRICS Bank, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. So there was quite a bit to add.
Absolutely. Yeah, that had to, you covered a lot of topics right there, I could imagine. You probably had to edit it down to get it down to 100 pages because there's so much potential new stuff to write about.
Yeah, and actually a part of these 100 pages contain information about what I call the financial economic war. And if you study what has happened with the currency move, the ruble, the drop in the price of oil, it's quite certain for me that Wall Street powers, Wall Street banks, are really working very hard to punish Russia, and they really try to get some kind of regime change even in Russia. And there was one example that in December last year, when the ruble was really falling very fast, the clients of a big Russian bank, they received a text message out of the blue telling them to take their money out of this Russian bank because the bank was on the verge of collapse. And the Russians, they think that the CIA was behind this whole operation. So there's a war going on, and it's a war which not clearly visible, and that's, I call it the financial economic war, and that's an important topic of the revised edition of the Big Reset.
And for everybody listening, the big advantage of this format is you all get to submit questions to Will that you're dying to have answered, and we'll get to as many of those as we can today. On your GoToWebinar control panel, there is a dialog box. You click on that. There's a questions tab. Type in whatever you'd like to ask, and I will relay it to Will in just a moment. But I do want to start, though, with a couple of things that are on my mind, and you kind of touched on one there, is everything that is just changing so rapidly. But at the same time, there are still we're still dealing with the current financial system that's been propped up and held together for the last 7 or 8 years after the financial crisis of 2008. You gained a lot of fame back in 2007 and 2008 for having predicted that crisis and seeing it coming. What do you see today that is eerily similar, if anything? Do you have this kind of same sense that things could unravel at any time?
That's a great question. In 2006, 2007, I was working as a market commentator for Dutch TV. And I was telling my audience almost every day that things couldn't continue as they were, and that we were on the verge of a major crisis in US housing. And I advised people to look at gold and silver because I said there will be a run towards gold and silver. And gold was trading $700 at that time, and silver was like $10, $12. And people laughed at me, you know, and they even my colleagues at the television station, you know, at a certain point they said, "Well, Willem, you can't keep telling us this because everything's going according to plan." And well, then the big one came, and then I became a very well-known personality in Holland, and I was invited in all talk shows. And now it feels just like 2006, 2007. You know, in the mainstream media, they don't call me anymore to be on their programs, which is fine for me because I became too well known in the Netherlands. So I like to be a little on the background or even maybe underground. And people are questioning again what my thesis is. They're questioning again why you should own gold and silver. And the wonderful thing for me is I published this book early 2014, and it's now been translated to seven other languages: Arabic and German and Chinese. And I've been quite a lot to China, and whenever I travel to China, I meet very like-minded people, and especially on the highest level. If I was able to introduce my book during a presentation at one of the highest level monetary think tanks, which is directly related to the Communist Party, and people in those institutions, they think very much alike, and they follow my thesis very serious.
Well, as they should, and no question about it. As you mentioned, so many things have continued to play out in the last 18 months, just as you wrote in the Big Reset. And one of those things that you focused upon in the past is this, I guess, the future of the euro, especially with the latest can kicking in Greece, and then also the IMF and their SDR. And you mentioned China. I mean, they were just told and kind of stiff-armed for another 12 months. Any inclusion of the yuan in that special drawing right. What are your current thoughts there? Does the euro crisis just come up again sometime soon? And then, if you could kind of segue that into what you think of the future of the IMF and the inclusion of the yuan.
Well, for me, one of the most important topics is the SDR, the currency basket of the IMF. 2 years ago, when I started writing the book, not many people were talking about the SDR. Jim Ricketts touched upon it in his book, and the SDR became a mainstream media topic, especially in Asia. You know, in China, everybody's talking about it, and the Chinese, they told me firsthand that they feel trapped in the dollar now. The Chinese, they really want to see important changes to the system. They really want to get rid of the dollar, but the dollar will stay, the dollar will still be used, like the euro will still be used in the future. But the Chinese are very, very, they make it very certain that the world currency, this situation has to change, and it is their idea to use the SDR, because in the SDR, in the currency basket, the dollar is still an important element. But the renminbi, the Chinese currency, has to be added to this currency basket, and then the SDR can be used as a world currency. But as you know, there are not too many SDRs around now. I think there's 200 billion. So the Chinese, they propose that the IMF can create many, many more SDRs in the years to come. It could be trillions and trillions, and we can use these trillions of SDRs to well, like we used central banks' balance sheets in the last crisis. To come back to your question about the euro, I think the euro has its, some of its own some of its problems of its own. But the dollar has some problems. The yen has problems. The British pound is not very solid. So that I'm not one of the guys who will tell you that the crisis will be around the euro and euro only. If you look at Japanese debt, 250% to GDP, there has to be a debt restructuring. There has to be a new world reserve currency. The Chinese would like to see a new worldwide central bank. They don't trust the IMF that much, although they have one of their highest ranking Chinese bankers working there as a director. So this is a long answer to your question.
Well, before I get to it, just one more thing that I'd like to ask you, and I just was thinking about while you were talking there. As an analyst, you know, like I consider myself one because I sit around all day long writing and tweeting and reading and doing all this stuff. You know, it's kind of my job to keep track of all the stuff for everybody here that visits TFMR. You know, people have said for years that, like what you just said, the Chinese folks say they're trapped. You know, they're buried in these dollar reserves, and they really can't sell their treasuries because they would move the market, and bond market would move downward, which would collapse price and shoot interest rates higher, and they'd be devaluing their own reserves and all that kind of stuff. And I look at
But they
what happened.
started selling it this summer. They started selling some
Well,
of them.
exactly. And I look at what happened in the last, you know, 45 days or so. There was this crisis that, in a sense, China created in its own right by devaluing the yuan. It got overshot, and they were forced to then sell 90, 80, $90 billion of their treasury reserves, and they were able to do it without moving the interest rate needle because there was either central bank or global investment demand for what they were selling.
Well, I think the China, yeah, sorry.
Do you think, and again, I don't want to screw my hat on too tight here, but do you think that was, is there any possibility that was a plan
I think, yeah, I think the Chinese are quite bright people, you know. The Chinese, the Chinese culture, Chinese state has been around for 3,000 years, so. If you mess it up, you know, you don't survive that long. So Chinese are very long-term thinkers. Their goal is 2048. You know why it's 2048?
I can only imagine the anniversary of the Ming Dynasty or something.
No, it's the anniversary of the Communist Party, the
Oh,
revolution 100 years.
1904. I was thinking too long of term.
Yeah. No, so they have a plan, long-term plan, working towards 2048. They want to be world leader by then, and everything until from now on, 2015 towards 2048, is working towards that position. So the Chinese, they have a plan, and the Chinese, they feel trapped because of their large dollar holdings. Not only they have 1,200, 1,300 billion of U.S. treasuries, they also own quite a bit of forex positions in dollars in their sovereign wealth funds. And since the dollar has had this wonderful rise in the last year, I think the Chinese think it's very the Chinese think this is a very good time to exchange some dollars for other assets. And if you study, I've been studying the investments of the Chinese sovereign wealth funds. And I think 30%, 30% of their investments are in real hard assets. You know, they buy commodity companies. They buy ports in around the world. So I think they use some of their dollar holdings now to well, to buy hard assets around the world. And that's actually the same like we as an investor do. I'm a fund manager myself, and I always tell people you have to use the money now to buy into real assets, which can't be printed by governments, and which will turn out to be safe havens in the future once we get major resets within the system. And when I talk about a reset in the system, it means we need debt restructurings. Well, debt restructurings means we have to write down on sovereign bonds, and the pension funds and institutional investors who own many of these sovereign bonds, they will pay a hefty price.
Yep, exactly. Which said they'll certainly fight just as they did in Greece.
Yeah,
Well,
right. So, but I think the Chinese are very well aware of what's happening. They're very well aware of the U.S. Economic war actions against Russia. The Chinese understand they could one day be a victim themselves, and that the U.S. could take some financial economic. They could start some financial economic attacks on China. I think that's why China is backing Russia all the way now and sending a message to the White House, to the Pentagon. We know you play these tricks, and we, the BRICS countries, are united to fight your policies. And this is a very important change.
couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. All right, I've got a handful of questions that have already kind of piled up in queue, so I probably had best dive right in, and so you have the time to answer them. And again,
If I may
anybody.
add one thing, Craig,
Oh,
because
sure, by all means.
when I say that China is backing Russia all the way, people always think that China would like to go together with Russia to start a war against the US. But I think it's quite clear that China is not on the path of confrontation. China is on the path of cooperation. But they make it very clear to the United States that the US has to change its attitude. And when they don't change their attitude, you know, there is a red line, and they have this red line drawn regarding their position in the Chinese South Sea. They openly told to the US, you know, your navy is not the one who decides who can fool around in the South China Sea. So I think that's a very important development. But I still believe China wants cooperation, no confrontation.
Yeah, they can strengthen their negotiating hand by the things that they're doing. And but
Yeah.
as you said, the US has been unwilling to bend, and that's all part of what is ultimately concerning. There's almost a general arrogance that still that persists, that the US has always held all the financial cards and that we will dictate terms to everybody. It was a lot of that was discussed even last night in that presidential debate, you know, that when I'm president, I will direct the banks to kick countries out of SWIFT. And I'm thinking, no, you won't.
That's the way the U.S. wants to play its games. But it's not. The BRICS countries are really united now, and they clearly tell the U.S. we won't allow this to happen anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, the first question that I have in queue comes from, we'll call him Andy. And Andy wants to know the World Bank and the IMF have publicly voiced that they do not wish to see a rate hike from the Fed today or anytime in the future.
Yeah.
I always figure these banks are all on the same page with planning behind the scenes on such matters. So, do you have any opinion on a potential disconnect on a hike of rates around the globe?
I think the Fed moved itself into a corner,
Yep.
and that they need to raise rates, otherwise, you know, who will ever take them serious anymore? They've been telling us for such a long time, there will be a rate rise, that they almost have to do it. But if the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements, and if these institutions call upon the US not to raise rates, the Fed can say, well, you know, it was not our idea not to raise rates, but, you know, we listen to the voices in the world, so now it gives them an excuse for not raising rates. So I think that's the way these games are played in on the highest level.
Yeah, and it's funny to hear you say that. Anybody listening that's been following along here at TFMR and listening to the podcast, that's about exactly what we've been saying for several weeks. And it's not like
I'm listening to that.
It's very interesting. All right, moving on. Question from Ned, who wants to know, not Ned Naylor Leyland, if anybody's wondering. That's funny. The first question was Andy. The next one is Ned, which are two of my friends, but it's not them.
Great guy, from London.
Yeah, different guy. Ned wants to know, the IMF, I guess, has a five-year meeting. I guess they get together in 5 years. Scheduled for October 15th. Do you see this as significant, any potential reset trigger that could come out of that?
No. The IMF has made quite clear that later this year they will decide whether the renminbi will be added to the SDR currency basket. But when they decide that the renminbi will be added later this year, it won't be added in January, it will be added in October 2016. And there's a technical reason for this. I don't expect any major other reset news in later this year. Of course, I also listened to Martin Armstrong and his predictions regarding the third and the fourth quarter of this year. But I think these are more like turning points in world history. And, well, there's a lot happening now. We have the new crisis, the refugee crisis in Europe. Don't forget that this refugee crisis in Europe is the result of the U.S. actions in the Middle East in the last, 10 years. Mm-hmm. General Clark has made public that the actions in the Middle East, regime change in seven countries, have been planned in the 90s already.
Yeah. Yep.
Regime change in Syria and Libya are all executed in countries who used to be friends from Russia, or friends with Russia, and the U.S. has stated quite clearly, according to General Clark, that U.S. wanted to execute these regime changes before any new world power would arise. So the European refugee crisis is a direct result of U.S. Policies, like the sanctions against Russia and the crisis in Ukraine is also a direct result of U.S. policy, because I think the coup in Kiev, the coup in Ukraine, 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, was also U.S. orchestrated. So the U.S. is causing a lot of problems, a lot of troubles in the Middle East and in Europe. And we in Europe, we feel the pain, and more voices can now be heard within Europe, especially in Germany, that the Germans and some Europeans they understand these U.S. policies, and they really are fed up with it, and they really think about joining Russia and China within the BRICS alliance. So the U.S. is playing a very dangerous game.
No question. And there's no question about what you said, Willem, and it's entirely in line with what we've discussed here, and all the way down to the refugee crisis. You know, it was the U.S.'s idea to go in and turn Libya into a completely failed state. And so every boatload of people trying to escape Libya, that then we turn around and say, well, that's not our problem. That should be Italy's problem, or that should be Greece's problem. It's just so hypocritical. It's again, driving people away. It's not, you know, not going to
be a big, this will be a big story in the next few months, because the autumn is arriving now with rains in Europe.
Yeah.
And now it's still warm where the refugees are having their camps. But, you know, during winter time, if we get a severe winter, this can be a tragedy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
it can really influence mass media and general public.
Yeah. All right. Turning to the next question. Again, anybody that has a question for Willem you'd like me to ask or follow up on, just open that questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel and type it in. This one comes from Larry. I'm going to kind of massage Larry's question a little bit and broaden it out. He wants to know about the petrodollar and how the U.S.'s, I guess, movement with Iran might affect that. But I would kind of also ask you, you know, the Chinese, as we were discussing earlier, are doing all these different things, making plans for the future. There's soon to be a yuan-priced daily gold fix. There is, I don't know if it's when it's planned, but there will be a yuan-based contract for crude oil or crude oil futures in Shanghai or wherever it's going to be. This petrodollar, though, is a key part of the dollar hegemony.
Yeah.
Where do you see that? You have any thoughts on that? Where do you see that headed near term, but also maybe slightly longer term?
We know the U.S. is very nervous. We've heard some statements. John Kerry, Secretary of State.
Yep.
He has been telling the U.S. audience, U.S. senators, during an interview that if they don't accept the Iran deal, the end of the dollar as the main currency and as the petrodollar could be in sight.
Well,
so this shows you that the Iran deal is also connected with the survival of the dollar, and it tells you that the leadership, the U.S. leadership, is very, very concerned about the all forces who want to take down the dollar as the main currency and as a petrodollar. And as I told you, the Chinese have this very long-term vision, and they state openly that they want the pricing power for gold, oil, and other commodities to move away from the U.S. towards China. And pricing mechanism means prices are set now on future markets in Chicago, on the COMEX and other markets, and Chinese are very aware of the importance of moving this pricing power towards their exchanges. So
yes.
In China, the volume of silver future trading is now higher than in the U.S. So once you have, once you're the main country in which these future contracts are traded, you have power over the pricing mechanism.
Exactly.
And the Chinese understand this very well.
And you had mentioned earlier, when before we got started, your optimism about prices bottoming and silver demand is, that we've seen in India, that Kuz Jansen's been writing about, or just the staggering import numbers that continue in China, the junior gold miners looking to perk up a little bit. Before I get to the last question, you just want to expand for everybody what you're seeing and your optimism in terms of the price?
Yeah, well, I'm an investor myself. I'm a fund manager, and we've had this terrible correction for the last 4 years, and it also brought us down 70-80%. But we had wonderful years in 2009, 2010, and we're still a 30 million plus resource fund. And I think the outlook for the future is very, very bright. And one little piece of information, which is overlooked by many investors, the Chinese, they have made public in the last few months that they will start their own gold resource investment fund.
Yes.
And this will be a $16 billion fund.
Yes.
And $16 billion is more than the total of all worldwide gold and commodity funds.
It was about maybe, even at these prices, 500 metric tons or something that they were going to buy, wasn't it?
Well, they will invest this money not in physical silver. They will invest it in exploration companies, in development stage companies. So they will build a lot of new mines along the Silk Road. The Silk Road is the famous trade road between Europe and Asia. You have all these countries like Kazakhstan and Tajikistan and Mongolia and China along the route and Russia. So China is investing $16 billion to develop gold mines along this route. And it's very important to understand because it shows you that China tells you that they think gold will be very important in the future.
Yes.
Like they change their system, they report every day, every month they report their new official gold holdings.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it's every 6 years. So China is the physical demand for gold is now over 2,000 tons a year, and even more important, Chinese Central Bank, the People Bank of China, they published on their website, and I translated it myself, well, through translators, but it's a very important statement that they have this official program of storing gold with the people. You know,
yes.
this is officially. An official policy by the People Bank of China to tell ordinary Chinese to buy as much gold as possible. Well, you won't do that if you don't think gold is going much higher in the future. Otherwise, your citizens will be very angry with you.
Yes, or if you didn't have long-term plans for integrating gold into your financial system.
Yes.
No doubt about that. Willem, again, I know time is short and you're being very generous with your time. I have one more question in queue before we get to the final four. This could almost be a final five because it's a pretty quick question. This comes from Paul, who just simply wants to know which country, and as he phrases it, is in the most trouble, China, the U.S., or even the Netherlands. I'm not sure what he means by trouble, but I'll just let you take that question and run.
Actually, it's Russia. Well, it's Venezuela.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few failed states.
Yes.
And when we hear failed states, we think about Somalia, and of course that's a failed state. Libya is a failed state now, but a country like Venezuela or Argentina is almost a failed state as well. Of course, the government structures, they're still well organized and they're still functioning, but they don't have any access to real worldwide financing. And if you're unhappy enough to live in one of these countries, you know, which are not seen as terribly important for the worldwide financial order, you have a miserable life. And Greece is one of those countries, but there's a huge pressure from the U.S. To the EU to keep Greece within the EU. Otherwise, Greece will become part of the BRICS alliance. And if you ask me which countries have the largest problems, Russia has, of course, some very, very big problems given the decline of the ruble and the oil price. But the oil price, an oil price under $50 is not sustainable because the cost price for I think 30-40% of worldwide oil production is above $30-$40 now. So you see, I think oil has bottomed. If you look at the chart, there's a very nice technical pattern, a double bottom, higher bottom, and I think oil can trade around $50-$60 for some time to come. But Russia has been hit very hard, but with the help of China, I think Russia will survive, Putin will survive, and we have to watch Putin's actions because Putin he understands that he can gain a lot by making a first move, and he's a very bright guy. He's not a Bush guy.
Yes, and to that point, the move to re-annex, if you will, Crimea needs to be viewed that way too, because he saw what the U.S. did in Ukraine in sponsoring that coup. And said, if we don't move now, we're never going to have a warm water port ever again.
Yeah. But we also have Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is a very important navy port, and that's in the Baltics. And he could do a similar move there. I was in a meeting last night where a Dutch retired colonel, retired military officer, he was warning that Putin could do a move like that again, and then things could get more serious. And I don't expect war breaking out. I don't expect the euro collapsing. You know, changes within the financial world, within the economic system, always take much longer than people tend to think. There will be major changes coming in the next 5, 10 to 20 years, and I hope we can avoid war. There's a very interesting interview I found online with George Soros. George Soros is also pointing towards the risk of confrontation, but he also thinks that China is wise enough to choose the path of cooperation. China has much to lose by confrontation, and I think China, the Chinese and Russian relation can be seen like Russia is the bulldog who's making a lot of noises and who's grabbing some legs, but China is holding the rope, and China controls Russia.
We all pray that you are correct, Willem, I'm right there with you. I hope so. The what concerns me the most is history is not replete with examples of whoever holds the purse. In this case, currently the U.S. has had it for 70 years. They don't usually hand that over peacefully. They usually go rather grudgingly.
Yeah. Well, I was privileged to do a presentation before the International Monetary Institute in Beijing, which is their main monetary think tank. And I also warned the Chinese that the U.S. has taken the initiative for the last 100 years. In 1913, with the start of the Fed, in 1933, the New Deal by Roosevelt, in 1944, Bretton Woods, 1971, closing of the gold window. And I told the Chinese, I don't know if they listened to me, but I would be surprised when the U.S. doesn't take the initiative again.
Oh, that would, yeah, that would be, boy, that would be wonderful. That would ease a lot of concern, no doubt about it. And hopefully that'll turn out that way. And again, I encourage everybody to read The Big Reset, and especially check out that revised edition when it comes in October. Willem, thank you. If you're ready, I've got our tradition around here is the final four, just four quick ones.
Well, we can do four quick ones. And I just want to advise people at Amazon.com, you can order the revised edition now. There is a little button on the cover which has revised edition, and then it will be delivered, I think, in a month's time.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, gosh, everybody should be booking that right now, because I know the initial edition was must required reading, so I can only imagine the revised edition will certainly be that. Now I'm getting my own copy. All right, four quick questions on the way out.
Okay.
You can usually answer these as just a simple word or a sentence. So if you're ready, number one, big news about a year ago was that the Dutch had repatriated 122 metric tons of gold from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Just wondering if you'd actually seen any of that gold.
I haven't seen it myself, but I know people who have seen it.
Okay, so it is there.
And actually, the Dutch president of the central bank, via somebody we both knew, he asked me to calm down about it because he's really bringing it home now. So he really asked me to trust him.
So okay, fair enough. That's as we all say, if you don't hold it, you don't really own it. So that's good to know for all the Dutch people. All right, second, it's fall here in the U.S. A lot of, make pot roast. We call a big chunk of meat with some potatoes. A lot of times you do that in what we call a Dutch oven. Do you own a Dutch oven?
No, I have a microwave.
That will work just fine. All right. Now, I also know you're headed out for dinner at this time of day. Maybe that might include a cocktail beforehand. So are you a fan of the Dutch liqueur or liquor? I guess it's Genever?
Genever. Yeah, well, I prefer vodka.
Okay.
So I always order a vodka Coke. But when I'm in on a party or there's a wedding, sometimes you're not allowed to ask for whiskey because the cost will be too high. So then they always tell me you can only buy Dutch liquors. So you can only have Dutch liquors. And so then I order a Genever Coke, which is almost the same in taste like a vodka Coke. So Dutch Genever is very famous, and you should try it. It's like vodka. Very nice.
Do you mix it with? I've seen it described as like gin. Do you mix it with tonic or anything, or how do?
Yeah, you can mix it with almost anything. You can also. I know quite a bit number of people here in Holland. They order a beer and a Genever, so they ordered like a little headshot
Like a boiler maker. We
to
would
get
call
drunk.
that a call that a boiler maker here in the US, perhaps.
So, but it's like vodka. It's like vodka, Dutch Genever. It has been around here for I think 600 to 700 years, so it's very very traditional.
Well, I tell you what, after the Fed gets done with us here in an hour or so, I may be looking for some. So I'll take that under advisement. Finally, to that end, just a guess, right? Well, let me just pull it up on my phone right now. We've got the FOMC minutes or the headlines coming out here in about an hour. At present, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 16,742. By the time stocks close in New York tomorrow, where will the Dow Jones Industrial Average be, Willem?
Over 16,000.
Well, you want to give me? I need a number. It's 16,740.
16,000.
What do you think? 16?
16,221.
Oh, down 500 from here.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I
Okay,
don't know.
fair enough. I
Yeah,
just
can
it
be up
kind of
500, can be down 500. I think it will go up, actually.
fair enough. Well, we shall see. Hey, Willem,
Gold
thank you.
will go up. Gold will go up, I think, quite strongly in the next few weeks.
I it's going to be a very fun, exciting time, and it all kicks off here shortly. So I got to let you go so you can get out to dinner, and then get back and turn on your local financial news to see what the market responses are. Thank you so much, though, for your time. We very much look forward to the revised edition of the Big Reset, and let's not let it go another year without us talking. You're too
Okay.
valuable, and you have too much wisdom and experience for us not to keep you on the shelf that long.
Well, we can do it twice a year, Greg. I enjoy it, so thanks.
All right, my friend, have a great rest of your day.
Okay, thanks, Dave.